I'm Robert Scott Bell, the voice of health, freedom, and healing liberty. Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show with your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
Let's go to the IVU Organics 3-in-1 Plant Garden Hotline, Holly, and bring in our next guest.
Vinny Simeoni is an author, blogger, lecturer, and has worked in the horticultural field for over 27 years. He has studied under some well-known horticultural professionals. He has spoken to many groups nationwide and has appeared on several garden shows, including Martha Stewart Living and HGTV shows. He has written 6 books since 2005. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, we're so happy you took time out of your day to join us on the program and not only educate Holly and myself, but all of our listeners, too.
Great. Thank you.
A lot of people have deer problems, and they use products like Bob-X. But there are a lot of deer-resistant plants in which one can plant here in the northern U.S. What are some that can be used to deter those curious animals that want to eat everything you have in your yard?
Well, that's a very good question, and the deer epidemic is definitely a big issue in gardening. And I would say that, ironically, a lot of gardeners are now planting native grasses, and grasses in general are inherently deer-resistant. For some reason, deer don't like grasses, and we're getting away from a lot of the exotic grasses and more into the native grasses. So things like switchgrass and little blue stem, feather grass, things like that are definitely deer-resistant. And I think a lot of gardeners are turning to them for deer-resistant plants. In addition to that, as far as ornamentals go, there's a wonderful evergreen perennial called hellebores. Hellebores or helleborus is another ornamental, a low-growing, winter-blooming ornamental that is highly deer-resistant and has shown pretty good resistance in a gardening situation.
Fantastic. Now, we love mulch. There's a lot of synthetic and conventional mulch options. We prefer more of a sustainable mulch. We like leaves. They are very sustainable. However, they don't. Once they break down, and that's all you got. What are some of your best sustainable mulch picks?
Well, I'm with you 100%. I think that as a sustainable gardener, you should really look to recycle as much as of what's in your own garden, your garden waste, as possible. So whether you're recycling your own leaves or your own making your own compost, I always tell gardeners that you might want to consider either buying, purchasing a shredder. There are these shredders you can buy, these small shredders that can shred up leaves and branches and other debris. And you can actually make your own homemade mulch. And, of course, that is the best mulch you could be top dressing and putting in your garden more than purchasing mulch from the outside. The other option is to work with a local arborist and have an arborist bring you, fresh mulch that's been shred up that you know is clean, and you can age that for a couple months and then use that in your garden. But I would advise people not to necessarily go out and buy bags of mulch that you don't know where they came from. Work with a reputable nursery or a reputable arborist, or make your own mulch in-house, and that would be the most sustainable way. To reuse your leaves, reuse your own grass clippings and things like that would be the ideal way to do it.
Now, I've heard the I don't know if it's a rumor, but the saying that you want, like you said, you want to know where the mulch came from, that there are, if mulch came from a tree that died of a disease, that disease could still be harbored in the mulch when you bring it into your landscape. Is there any truth to that?
Not really. Most times, if you are, if there's a, let's just say a tree that's diseased, and you grind up that wood or those branches, and you grind them up finely enough, and you age them for a while, usually those diseases are not going to infect other things, usually. The same thing with insects. If there's an insect, a borer or some kind of insect in a branch, and you grind up that wood, it's not going to live in that mulch. And as long as you age it, you should be fine. It's more the chemicals or things that might be in that mulch, especially if you have dyed mulch. You want to stay away from dyed mulch, where there might be chemicals in that mulch that you don't want to transfer into your garden.
But, yeah, it's good to know that the mulch is not detrimental if it is from a diseased tree, which makes a lot of sin because we get wood chips. It's the dye that really is detrimental or can lead to problems when it comes to that. When people establish a landscape around their new home or they want to redo their landscape, we find that many people go online, and we know that not everything online is gospel. What are the two biggest mistakes that you have found when people are that they do wrong when trying to redo their landscape?
Well, the first thing is everything starts with the soil, and we don't put enough emphasis on the biology of the soil. So you really need to make sure you have the right soil drainage, the right organic matter. You have to do a soil test. I would definitely recommend the soil test, especially if you're putting in a new landscape, and make sure that you have the proper soil conditions for the types of plants that you want to grow. The second thing I see as a huge mistake, people don't give their plants enough space. They sort of cram their plants in together, and plants get too large for those areas, and then in 4 or 5 years they have to either prune them or remove them because they've gotten too big. So a lot more emphasis should be kept on how big those plants are going to get ultimately and what kind of space they need, what kind of light they need, what kind of conditions they need. Very often we put plants in that look good in a certain area but don't necessarily want to grow in that certain in that area. So I think emphasis on soil and emphasis on how big those plants are going to get are two things two areas where we need to improve.
Well, and I think the other thing is just because it looks pretty on the picture doesn't mean it's going to grow right in your backyard or front
exactly.
yard.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Now, a lot of people have pets that roam their garden, their landscape, especially dogs. What are some plants that, decorative and edible, that they should definitely avoid, especially if they have pets that roam around and could possibly eat them and make them sick?
Well, that's a great question. I actually do a lecture, a PowerPoint presentation on petscaping, creating a pet-friendly garden, and that's a big, big issue as far as you want to have a beautiful garden, but you don't want your pets to get sick or to have any kind of problems in the garden. And so, you know, there's a lot of plants to avoid, a lot of landscape plants to avoid. For example, Rose of Sharon or hibiscus can be a plant that you'd want to avoid that can be, if ingested, could be poisonous. I mentioned before hellebores. Hellebores are wonderful ornamental plants, but hellebores are also, because they're deer resistant, they're also not good for your pets. So you'd want to stay away from hellebores. Any types of lilies, anything in the lily family with your cats, you'd want to stay away from lilies and make sure your cats are not getting into your lilies because they could be poisonous to cats. And then things like yews, taxus, laurels, privet, those types of ornamentals definitely kept away from your pets or vice versa.
Many people want to grow or they plant exotic plants that potentially are or do become invasive. They want that specific type of plant because they know it will grow in their yard, but how can they avoid the overtaking of the yard and still get what they want out of the plant?
Well, I think there's a couple of things to talk about here. You know, there's a lot of good, each state or almost each state has their own conservation department or their own Department of Movement and Conservation, or an organization, that nonprofit organization, that might try to promote education to prevent invasive species and things like that. So you should definitely check with your local government or your state government to see if there's an organization like that that will identify these plants so you'll be forewarned. And then the other thing is, you know, there's a lot of plants now that, if you do your research, there are a lot of plants now that are sterile, that don't set seed. I can give you an example of butterfly bush is an example of a plant that there are sterile forms that don't set seed. So where butterfly bush could be invasive in certain areas with sterile forms, you might have an option to try something else, or even barberry. Barberry could be an invasive plant too, but there are sterile forms of that plant that may not be as problematic. There are some bamboos that are spreaders and that will, you know, that will spread. There are some that are clumping bamboos. And so knowing which bamboo to plant, the clumpers like Fargesia would be a much better choice than one that would not be clumping or that would run. And so having that information and doing that research would be very, very helpful.
Well, and you said check with your local state university because there are some states that allow these plants and other states that do not allow the growth of certain plants.
Yep. And absolutely, the university programs are very good in getting out the information to forewarn gardeners or horticulturists that this plant might be a problem. And you're right, there are some states that prohibit it, some states that don't, and of course, with shipping and everything else, that could be an issue.
Okay, now tell us about your books briefly and where to find out more about you.
Well, I have 6 books out, and they're all basically books on ornamentals. My latest book is called Grow More with Less, Sustainable Garden Methods. And so I talk about a lot about issues that we're talking about today on the air. And it's a book that basically surrounds itself with things like native plants and planting for pollinators and composting and water conservation and all those things. And all of my books are available online. You can go to Amazon or one of the local, even one of the independent bookstores to get them. And I also have a website, VincentSimeone.com, where you can learn more about my books and actually download plant lists and get good information for your own garden.
Well, Vincent, we greatly appreciate you taking time out of your day to join us and educate Holly, myself, and all of our listeners about a vast variety of topics that we typically don't cover on the program, but we all need to be aware of.
Great. Thank you very much for having me.
For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.